2011, 5049, Western Management Incorporated against the United States, Mr. Kovacevic.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm Bob Kovacevic. I haven't owned any stock in Western Management for about 14 years, but I am the person who was alleged to be an employee now almost 20 years ago. I want to point out to the court that the court already knows this from the Bubble Room case, the employer, if Western Management was my employer, is obligated to help me pay my own income tax. Really, the employer doesn't owe any income tax. It's merely helping the employee to pay.
Counsel, income tax here or FICA?
Yes, Your Honor.
Which?
The employer has no duty to pay that tax. It has a duty to withhold.
You're talking about income tax, or are we talking about FICA obligations?
FICA,
right.
And of course, as the court knows, withholding is part of...
Right, okay, but you're not talking about tax on income. You're talking about the employment tax.
That's exactly right, okay. Your Honor.
All
this
right.
whole
because
case
I,
is about
I was a little confused
tax.
When you started off referencing income tax.
And I submit to Your Honors that the code sections... 3402D, if the employee, the recipient, pays the tax, the employer is no longer liable. Jones versus the United States, cited repeatedly in our briefs, says that when the Internal Revenue Service pursues the employer after the employee has paid the tax and the Internal Revenue Service knows this, it's frivolous. And here, of course, my declaration attaches my tax returns. And again, I want to point out that we had two or three people we classified as employees. We timely filed the 941s, the employment tax returns, timely paid them. And the only controversy here is whether or not I was an employee of my own professional corporation. I was the only attorney, and as the briefs point out, in the state of Washington, where I practiced and was incorporated, the stock has to be owned by the professional employee. If not, the corporation dissolves. So here I am in really a joint venture. It's never been held that way. But the corporation needed my bar license to exist, an unusual factor in an employee-employer relationship. The government says that there has never been any tax paid. That's totally wrong, because obviously I paid the tax with my return. Once that's done, then the account is stated. If in the normal case, the W-2 form is issued, the employee gets the form, the employee files at the due date of the return, determines whether he or she gets a refund, whether he owes some tax, and at that time, the account to the government is straightened out at the employee level. The employee is always primarily liable for his or her own tax. So here, the tax is paid with the returns. My declaration clearly says that. It was all paid by 1995.
Now, when you say that the taxes were paid, was this the so-called self-employment tax that you were paying?
That's right, Your Honor.
Now, as I understand it, you correct me if I've got this wrong, but my understanding is that if you're an employee, you pay whatever the amount is, 6%, 6+% right now, and the employer pays an equal amount, 6+%, and if you're paying self-employment tax, you pay the whole thing. You pay the 12%, and it turns out to be a wash.
That's correct.
As far as the IRS is concerned. Now, did you pay the full share, both of the what would have been the employee's part and the employer's part? Did you pay the total sum of those two as your self-employment tax throughout the period at issue?
Yes, Your Honor, I did. That's in the declaration. And my declaration clearly said I paid Booklot both halves. I believe it was 15.3 total at that time. And the self-employment, again, as the court just said, covers both halves, if you will. Normally, 6% is withheld and the employee matches it. I paid it all with the self-employment returns. And that was the same income. The only income that I reported was the draws and maybe some interest and so forth from the, what it then was, Robert E. Kovacevich P.S. The Western Management, and it was at that time, was on a fiscal year. So as a practical matter, I made draws during the year like any attorney would. The CPAs got it at the end of the calendar year. I paid tax on the calendar year that I drew. And then the CPAs kept a careful record of what was drawn and what the corporation made. When there was a deficiency, the corporation paid the income tax on the amount not withdrawn. See, we always had a lag here because, again, my personal year ended in December. The corporation's year ended in March. So the accountants kept track of that. CPAs did it. I didn't do it. And they had a running total of all that. And so that's what was reported. It wasn't any mystery. I report on my Schedule C. And then, of course, as I point out in the briefs, much of what I reported, or some of what I reported, was cash that I drew. There was no intent to defeat the withholding tax or the Social Security tax. I had a lot of, as a solo, I had a lot of cash payments that I would pay or would give the personnel at the office to get a certified copy. It's very hard to give a check to an employee who takes it to clerk. And so it was done out of practicality. The interesting thing is that 3121A says that you do not withhold on cash. That's a rather side issue, but it does get into some real theory as to how you determine whether the issue is logical or not logical. And in reality, I withdrew $2,000 or $3,000 of cash each year, not purposely, but the 3121A says you don't pay withholding or Social Security on cash. However, I paid complete 15.3% on my self-employment tax returns. I didn't get into that cash issue. I want to point out there's a lot of argument about whether or not the draws were kept by Western Management. Now, the lower court held, and it's at page 3 of the court's opinion, that the Western Management kept canceled checks and bank statements of payments to Kovacevich. So the court's holding was that the records were kept by Western Management. What the lower court did is take the later case I had as a personal employee on income tax and apply that and said, well, he didn't keep track as an employee of a whole bunch of records for income tax. I'm taking that issue and applying it to Western Management, even though Western Management kept good records. And here are the records that are attached to my declaration. It's to the penny. The accountants kept the draws, every check, they were all numbered, what it was for. They kept every single draw.
Counsel, you correct me if I'm wrong, but the Court of Federal Claims held that you were an employee of WMI.
That's right, Your Honor.
And that's what you're challenging.
That's correct. Well, that's the major challenge.
That's your major challenge. And you're saying that you were not an employee.
That's correct.
You were an independent contractor of some sort.
Exactly, Your Honor.
And this question of whether you're an employee of WMI or not, I mean, this has been a question that's been litigated before various times, hasn't it?
That's right, Your Honor.
In fact, the Ninth Circuit held, and I'm reading from their opinion, this is WMI, Commissioner of Internal Revenue Service versus the Ninth Circuit. It says, based on the record before us, we conclude as follows. The tax court did not clearly err in finding that Mr. Kovacevich is a statutory employee, a petitioner. And it goes on and on. And it seems to me that this question that you're challenging is one that's been decided by various courts in the past.
The question has been decided in later years, Your Honor, by the United States Tax Court after a full trial. Judge Foley held that I was not credible, which is an embarrassment to me. However, the Senate Oversight Committee, when I testified before them, they held I was credible.
Well, beyond that, I mean, this question of whether you're an employee, a statutory employee of WMI, seems to me that there's been various courts that have heard your case that you're bringing before us today and have decided that you're a statutory employee.
After a full trial, Your Honor, and in subsequent years, and as the Sonnen case on res judicata says, each year is a different situation. And these are the earliest years before the court. This court, as I understand it, has a duty for a de novo review, which some cases held that the court has to write as if the lower court never made a decision. And this is the first case to come up on the years, on the earliest years, and also on summary judgment.
I understand that we may be dealing with a different tax year here. But the question of whether you're a statutory employee, that question is identical to the one that's been litigated before, and you've lost on that.
There's very little difference, Your Honor. That's correct. But the transcript in the tax court cases, I also went into the tax court under a presumption of correctness. Tax court, you're after an audit, you presume the government is presumed to be correct. The standard this court has before it on summary judgment is whether there is, as of course Your Honors know, a dispute as to material fact. And my declaration is totally clear. I disputed all the facts. The government has no facts whatsoever. They did not put the record of the prior cases into evidence. And there's no right to call any witnesses. I did not have the same opportunity as I do before the Court of Claims and also this court to submit my affidavits. And there's clearly material facts in this case. And the court is right. They did decide on a similar legal holding. But I misquoted that, Your Honor. I misstated that. On a factual holding, what is de minimis? And that all of the regulations say an attorney in private practice is an independent contractor. A director, which I was, is an independent contractor. Then the dispute says a president who performs more than de minimis can be an employee. Now, if I were president of General Motors, I'd have a full-time job. I was president, actually, I never was elected, but I acted and signed a few tax returns as president because the blank required that. The time I spent, as my declaration says, was a few minutes a year. When you have a solo, closely held professional corporation, all you have to do is pay the license fee once a year. Administration, hire, fire, do the law work, is not a corporate administrative duty. Any law practice has those duties. So I'm saying the court did not interpret right. And I know I'm being repetitive, but this court has to look at it de novo and determine whether there are any facts that I worked harder, I worked more than de minimis as an assumed president. If I did work, I had to be a director, which I was, and a acting president. And my efforts, which were minutes a year, had to be divided between the two because I was both. Again, a director under the regulations the government has is an independent contractor. So the only thread here is de minimis. Which, logically, how much time does it take to run a closely held solo professional corporation to keep it intact? You pay the license fee. That's all it takes.
Let's hear from the government. We'll save you rebuttal time, Mr. Kovacic.
Thank you.
Ms. Moriarty.
May it please the court, I'm Regina Moriarty, and I represent the United States. As Judge Reyna was just discussing, the Ninth Circuit has, in fact, found that Mr. Kovacevic was an employee of Western Management, and that was, in fact, for different tax periods, but the relevant facts are basically the same for all the years that have been before the various courts. But importantly to this case is that the taxpayer stipulated that he all of the facts that would be necessary to find that he was an employee under Section 3121 D1. He stipulated that he served as president. He stipulated that he signed tax forms as president. He stipulated he controlled the corporation and made all major decisions. He was responsible for the day-to-day management of Western Management. He approved all hiring and firing, determined salaries, conducted performance reviews of the employees, and he signed all checks. On that basis, the Court of Federal Claims here found that Mr. Kovacevic was an employee of Western Management.
Why is this different from the routine lawyer's professional corporation?
It's not, state law doesn't affect this. We're looking at under the Internal Revenue Code, and it gives you two provisions for whether or not you can be an employee, and one of them states that you're an employee if you're an officer of the corporation. And so whether or not whatever state law determines under the Internal Revenue Code, you're considered.
You're not saying the corporate law, there's one corporate law for the IRS and another corporate law for every state?
I'm sure that the 50 states have different laws, and so the Internal Revenue Code is just for your federal taxes. It doesn't affect your state taxes that would be paid.
Exactly. That's the problem.
I'm afraid I don't understand, Your Honor.
I'm trying to understand why or if or the basis for the IRS not viewing this arrangement as what looks to me like a standard professional corporation as lawyers enter into.
It's because of all the additional work that, I mean, as the Court of Federal Claims and as we state in our brief, you can set up corporations that, and you have a dual capacity. But Mr. Kovacevic and Western Management didn't set their situation up like that. And when they intermingle all of their dealings, then under 3121 D1, when an officer of a corporation is conducting and doing more than minor activities for the corporation, then it's considered an employee and not an independent contractor.
Well, let me pursue Judge Newman's. I'm sorry, were you done? I wanted to follow up on your question because I had the same essential question. I mean, the typical partnership, legal partnership, is a partnership, not a corporation, and each of the partners pays a self-employment tax, which is double what would have been the employee's share of the FICA tax, correct?
Correct.
Right. All right. First question, is it true, as Mr. Kovacevic says, that he paid the full load of the self-employment tax for the year or the years that is there at issue here?
The record doesn't indicate that. What his declaration says is that I filed my personal income tax returns and I paid those taxes. But what the record also shows is that the IRS asserted deficiencies against Mr. Kovacevic for all of those years for his individual income taxes because he did not include the full amount of wages that Western Management had reported on their corporate return.
I see, okay.
And so once you're issued a deficiency saying that you're not self-employed, those are wages, then self-employment wages and income taxes are both Subtitle A taxes.
Right.
Whereas FICA and Social Security are Subtitle C taxes.
Right.
The employer is responsible for the FICA taxes.
Right.
And they're not interchangeable with the self-employment taxes. And generally what happens
they're equivalent. They may not be interchangeable. But in other words, if I'm a partner in a law firm, I'm paying self-employment taxes, right?
I assume so.
Okay. Assume I will. And if suddenly the partnership decides to incorporate, then what happens is I go down to one half because I'm paying my share of the FICA and the corporation is paying the other half, right? All right. Now, are you suggesting that, I just don't know the answer to this, so help me here, that in every state in which the appropriate means of lawyer organization is not the partnership but is the limited liability corporation, that the each of the partners, even though they may call themselves partners, is actually an employee, and that that employee pays FICA at the employee rate, and that the limited liability corporation pays the other half of the FICA. Is that the way it works?
No, I'm going to say that the partners in a corporation, it would all depend on the individual facts of how they operate within that corporation. And if there are certain people who are designated to be officers and they only do officer duties, then...
Well, I'm getting confused, Betty. Suppose this, it's a small partnership. It has five members. I'm the managing partner. So I spend 3 hours a week hiring secretaries and paralegals and so forth and taking care of dealing with the IRS. But the rest of my time I practice law, exactly the way my fellow partners do. We all call ourselves partners, but this is part of a limited liability corporation. Am I an employee, and do I get treated differently for purposes of FICA from my partners, or are we all employees?
I would say, just based on your fact scenario, that 3 hours a week is considered minor services, and depending on how the documents were drawn up, identifying what you were going to do as a managing partner compared to the other ones, that you would fall under the exception and would not fall under 3121D1. But in this case, stipulated facts show that Mr. Kovacevich was providing more than minor services to the corporation, and therefore he didn't fall under, he was considered an employee.
Such services being his legal work?
That he filed all the returns, that he served as president, that he controlled the day-to-day operations, that he made all major decisions, that he worked 60 to 70 hours per week, and that all of
the key is how to classify his legal work, because everything you said up until you got to the 60 and 70 hours a week is stuff that I, as a managing partner, would be doing, correct? Well, assume it's correct.
Yeah,
correct.
I've never worked.
Yeah, well, assume. So, how am I distinguished from Mr. Kovacevich? Except for the fact that you're attributing his legal work to work which is as an employee of the corporation or done for the corporation as opposed to as, in effect, a sole proprietor.
I think that in your hypothetical that managing partner is clearly separating out and saying, here I have two distinct unrelated capacities that I'm performing as. And in this case, Judge Firestone found that they were all intermingled and that Mr. Kovacevich did not do that.
Was there any type of agreement between Mr. Kovacevich and WMI?
Not that's in the record.
Like a partnership agreement or employee contract, independent contractor agreement?
Not that's in the record, but none that I know of. So the second part of the case then is dealing with the computation of the taxes that were due for Western Management. And what the IRS did here was they took the actual figures off of Western Management's corporate returns and they divided those into the quarters at issue and they applied the statutory rates to come up with the amount of Social Security and unemployment taxes that were due. They then took the certificate of assessment and payments, which is entitled to presumption of correctness here, and applied all the credits, totaling over $31,000, to come up with the amount of taxes that the IRS is entitled to for the years at issue. Trying to think what I need to respond to that was brought up. I think I mentioned that the FICA and self-employment taxes are not interchangeable, so just because Mr. Kovacevic may have paid some self-employment taxes doesn't relieve the employer of paying his FICA taxes.
Well, no, but would you be here if, I mean, suppose that the situation were clear that Mr. Kovacevic had paid double what he would have paid under the FICA tax as his self-employment tax, therefore covering every single red cent of what the employer, the corporation here, would have had to pay, then that's a wash, right? The IRS is fine.
It's not a wash.
Well, how is it not a wash?
Because we got two separate taxpayers involved here, and you can't take money from one taxpayer to pay for the other taxpayer's account.
But it's a wash in terms of dollars, correct? You have the same number of dollars in your pocket. You just are saying it's a different pocket.
Right, but I mean, you can't. All taxpayers are separate, and you can't. I mean,
I understand that, but it just seems the whiff of concern here that is floating around is that you're taking advantage of the fact that we have two separate entities to say, well, you may have paid everything you were obliged to pay as a under a self-employment tax. You may have paid double. Maybe not, but my hypothetical is, if he had paid double, are you telling me that if you can establish that he in fact was an employee of Western Management, that you can come after Western Management in addition to the 13 or 15% that he paid for another 6.5%?
Yes, and
you
and the proper thing for Mr. Kovacevic or the taxpayer would
is to seek a refund.
Isn't that what's happening here? Isn't this case where Mr. Kovacevic is seeking a refund of excess employment tax for 92 and 93 in the amount of over $18,000?
Western Management is seeking it, not Mr. Kovacevic.
Yes, Western Management. Okay.
Mr. Kovacevic and his individual returns for the years that we have here went all through deficiency proceedings with the tax court. The tax court found that there were deficiencies. And then several years after that, the IRS is trying to collect those deficiencies, and there are collection due process proceedings that cases cited in my brief on bottom of page 43. It's a TC memo case where you can tell from that opinion that the 1992 tax deficiency has not yet been paid, but the IRS is trying to collect that amount. So we don't know if those taxes have been paid in full. And I also would point out that when an individual files his income tax returns, you know, here's the amount of money I owe on my wages or my dividends or my interest income or whatever, and then here's my self-employment tax. So it is all on the same return. They're all Subtitle A taxes. Mm-hmm. If in a situation like this, the IRS determines you're not an employee, I mean, you're not an independent contractor, you're an employee, and those wages you claimed were self-employment income aren't. Those taxes reported as self-employment income can be used to pay your income tax deficiency because it's all on the same return and they're all Subtitle A taxes. In this case, even I think taking those figures into account, the IRS still found that there was a deficiency in those years in 1992 for Mr. Kovacevic's individual income tax return.
That the entire deficiency is based on this aspect, the entire assessment against the corporation?
The assessment against the corporation in this case is based on the amount of contract labor, is how it was identified on the corporate return, that Western Management claimed to have paid to Mr. Kovacevic and deducted on its corporate returns. The IRS took those figures, didn't reconstruct any kind of income. It just said, okay, that's what you've said you've paid him. That's what we're going to use to compute the tax liability of Western Management. It then just used the standard percentages that you would use to apply for Social Security and unemployment taxes and income tax withholding. And then it took into account the wage basis, so that if the amounts that were listed as, say, $130,000 a year exceeded what you would pay Social Security on, they didn't compute the Social Security tax on the excess of that. So they used, it was a formulaic exercise that they went through here, taking the figures that Western Management had used on their corporate returns and simply applying the percentages of taxes due as all of us would pay. And that's how you came up with the figures.
Any questions for Ms. Moriarty? Thank you, Ms. Moriarty.
Thank you. Taking the last statement Ms. Moriarty made first, that is not correct on the assessment. What the Internal Revenue Service did was adopt, or in the lower court, was take the judgment of the tax court that went out on its own and said, we looked through the corporation and we're going to tax Kovacevic with all the corporation's income, and the revenue agent made a formula between fiscal and calendar years, then assessed 20% withholding, and the court's ruling said, since the employee records were not correct, we can do this assessment, contrary to Bubble Room. Bubble Room in this court said 446A is advisory but not binding on us. The statute on employees is 26.6001. The regulations say an employee doesn't have to keep track of anything on his paycheck, on his or her paycheck. And the regulations under 6001A say that employees, it's not mandatory. The trial court used the tax court case of myself as a individual taxpayer, which had all kinds of different deductions, saying, well, even though Western Management kept good records, I'm going to say that the records weren't right, therefore I can make the assessment. No employee has to keep track of the paychecks. I submit, I presume this court classifies employees. You don't have to write down each time you get a payment. Your employer has to. And here, Western Management did. And
that's, but your contention is that you weren't an employee.
That's correct. But even if I were, the court could not use the fact that me as an employee didn't keep good records and use it against Western Management, the employer. Another issue the court brought up, Western Revised Code 18100060 prohibits the corporation from practicing law. The analogy that Ms. Moriarty makes ignores the insurance revenue ruling, where the insurance people were licensed to sell insurance and then had corporate formalities, and the revenue ruling says no. There's a total distinction between being an insurance, licensed insurance salesman, and a corporate president, and said there's, and there can, there's a distinction here. As court question, Ms. Moriarty refers to administering the law practice in which a corporation is unnecessary. I practiced as unincorporated for several years. I had to do these various things. And she actually answered the question better than I did. She answered the question and said, well, if there's only 3 hours or more a month, those are minor services as a president. My services were minutes in the whole year, maybe an hour, as a president of the corporation. So the merger into the transmutation, if you will, that law practice is more than de minimis services as president is a misnomer. The Washington law allows a officer of a corporation to be allows a non-lawyer to be an officer of the corporation. So you don't have to be a lawyer to be an officer. And the opposite doesn't follow. And so that's the distinction is in the local law of professional corporations. And it's obvious. You got to run a business no matter what it is, but that doesn't make it a corporate employer services to administer.
Was Woodson Management Incorporated as a professional corporation?
Yes, Your Honor. It was Robert E. Kovacevich, B.S., until 1997. It hasn't been that since 97.
When did it become Western Management, Inc.?
97.
And did you file reincorporate at that
time?
Yes,
it reincorporated. It abandoned. It could not practice law. The articles changed, and then it became a general corporation. It's now operating.
So it's a general corporation, not
That's correct. As a general corporation, just specifically said.
It's not a law firm, in other words.
That's correct. It cannot practice law.
But prior to 97, it was a professional corporation?
Yes, it's a generic, and the articles are filed in the record. And, yeah, it was a generic professional corporation.
Any more questions?
If I could end, the regulations I keep fumbling is Treasury Regulation 3-6001-1A and 6000-1D, saying that the form of records that a employer keeps is any way you can keep track of how much you pay the employee. And I submit the computations were not correct in this case, and the bubble room wage base was exceeded. And it's right in my, in other words, more Social Security would be paid than the wage base allows. And Bubba Room specifically reversed the case on that point and sent it back to determine whether the proper Social Security was paid. It was overpaid in this case, according to this. Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate the court allowing me an oral argument. I know this is not the largest case the court has its inventory.
Maybe. Thank you, Mr. Kovacevich. Ms. Moriarty, case is taken under submission.